very good day to you all. Welcome back to Marca's Eye on La Liga podcast, bringing you the best Spanish football roundup once a week, every single week. Although it has been 8 days since we last graced the airwaves. We are back, though, after the international break with plenty to discuss. Of course, the big tie in Turin against Italy will be first up. We'll be looking at the Albania match as well for the Spanish national team, the fallout of Gerard Piqué's decision to step away from the national team over shirt sleeves. Shirt sleeves, are we really getting to that point in the footballing world where it's come to this? And of course, plenty more coming your way on the show today. I'm your host, Ollie Wilson, as always, bringing you the brightest minds that Marca have to offer. And we've got two very special guests indeed on the show today. First up, Dov Schiavone, editor-in-chief of Marca in English. Dov, how you doing, mate? Pleasure to have you on the show for the first time.
Yeah, it's good to be here. It's been a hectic few days travelling around Europe watching the international football. This is usually the time when people get a break. People like us, as internationals, things kind of tend to quiet down a little bit, but this weekend has been very different.
Yeah, there's no rest for the wicked, and when you've got almost politics and football joining like we have done with this Gerard Piqué debacle, there's no rest for anybody at Marca, that's for sure. And that puts a lot of pressure on the next man up on the show, Aldo Salnati, joining us once again. Aldo, you must have been very busy with all of this then over the last few days. Top quality journalist, of course, for Marca in English.
Yeah, it's good to be back. Very busy few days as well with the Ramos injury and Piqué's decision coming basically right after the other. So lots to talk about.
Yeah, when it rains, it certainly pours. But let's start from the very beginning of the international break. Let's have a look back at that 1-1 draw against the Italians in Turin. Dov, I want to start with you first, because this was a game that we were all expecting to be a real chess match. It actually was far more of a feisty affair than I think some of us were expecting in Turin.
Yeah, I mean, I was lucky enough to be at the game in the Euros between the two countries, and this was almost, and I was lucky enough to beat this game as well, and this was almost the exact opposite of it, with just the team swapping roles, because in Paris it was Italy who were kind of the more dominant side, particularly in the first half, and Spain didn't really know what to do with them, whereas in this case on the weekend it was Spain who were utterly dominant for about an hour and a bit, where the Italians just had nothing. They couldn't live with them. It was really disconcerting to watch an Italian team that seems to me to have regressed so much from the one that Conte had just a few months ago in the Euros, and the way that particularly Iniesta and David Silva, for me, just completely, they just looked like they could walk through that Italian defence at any moment, and they couldn't get the ball off them at all, which was obviously, it was great to watch, it was lovely to see, but obviously, people would have noticed by my surname I have a particular affliction for the blue side. So it was a bit a bit worrying to see an Italian team basically being dominated for the most part. And it wasn't until Spain started to get a little bit tired, and Giampiero Ventura, the Italy coach, changed a few things in attack, i.e., taking off Graziano Pelle and Edea and bringing on Immobile and Belotti, that Italy actually looked a bit more dangerous. So that was the thing that I took away from it, is that Spain, they were good, they didn't create a lot of kind of really, really good chances. There were a few, and then they got tired towards the end, where Italy came into the fore and kind of got that late equaliser.
And they got a bit of a break, the Spanish, as well, you have to say. I mean, Iniesta coming back at the right time for a big game against the Italians was very important. But as you said, the sluggish start of the Italians, who haven't taken to life really since Conte departed and went to Chelsea, of course, in the Premier League. It's been a really awkward change of manager for the Italians since the summer period, whereas the Spanish have kind of just got down to it, because arguably this is just a Spain team that knows each other almost inside out, despite the flexible squad rotation that's been in the last few weeks or so in the international break so far this season, Albert.
Yeah, there's I think we saw, like Dom mentioned, this really great start, but also the fact that the pressing was very good, the possession game that we've come to recognize. I think Lopetegui's side is finally getting on the right track, and those were probably the best, most dominant minutes since he took over from Del Bosque. And I mean, there was really clear dominance for that first hour, and they did a lot of things well.
Is it not a bit worrying, though, that they didn't have that much dominance for an hour, but they really didn't create too much. I mean, Buffon really didn't have any kind of particularly difficult saves to make. Anything that he did have to do was straight at him, and then obviously when he did his like thing at the end. But apart from that, he was rarely tested. That for me would be a little bit worrying.
I mean, wouldn't you be too unworried in the fact that you've still got a man leading the line for Spain at the moment, Diego Costa, who's having an excellent season. And really, the Spanish just need to go, and a point for them was something they were happy to take with. They got a bit of luck, of course, with Buffon's error that led to the goal. But I think coming out of Italy, most Spanish football fans would have said, look, we can get a point. That puts it in a really nice position in the group. I wouldn't be too worried if I was a Spanish football fan right now, because that clinical finisher has been something that's sometimes eluded this national team. Goals have come from multiple sources. Mm-hmm. And so to not have that for this game, especially with, as you say, with a new change in manager still kind of just getting comfortable in the role, you have to think, Locatelli, that this is just inevitable, that there will still be a little bit of a time of learning out a little bit of the new manager's process and getting comfortable in his new system.
I think the nine issue is actually bigger than, I mean, it's a bit a talking point that's actually worth bringing up. It's something that continues to plague the national team, and La Roja might have gotten away with it before, but I think Lopetegui's Spain is going to be different than its predecessor, and it really needs someone to lead the line, and I'm not sure that Costa is that right fit. He's unable to connect well, move well, and a lot of things like that are very noticeable. So I think that it is a big issue, and it's something definitely to worry about. And you know, like Dov mentioned, this is the first 60 minutes where there's just a clear dominance, but they aren't creating that many chances. I think that, you know, this team is maybe set up in a way that isn't maximizing chances. They're maximizing possession. They're pressing well. They're doing other things well, but they're not able to get those goal scoring opportunities against great defensive teams that are sitting fairly deep or able to cut off spaces. I mean, we'll get to the Albania game later, but it was a similar story. Very good defensive teams that were able to stop Spain from creating chances. And, you know, towards the end of the match, when Italy was able to get a lot of chances on the counterattack, they were able to really hurt Spain. So I think this number nine issue is something definitely to keep an eye on. And we'll see if Costa, who has had a good season, is really able to play in sync with the rest of the squad.
Do you think that will just come in time, though? I mean, to both of you, this is something that surely just comes with being in the national team set up for a long period of time, and Costa's still very much a bit of an outsider, and the attitude that he has and the way he plays the game is very different to what we think about Spanish football. You know, he is the rough and tumble, but isn't that good to have perhaps in a number nine that's going to need to hold up the ball a bit more?
I think so. I think it's good to have that type of player for particular situations that they can maybe just use their physicality to break through a defence. But then I think that player, particularly for Spain, I think also needs to be able to link up with the guys behind them, the guys like Silva and Iniesta and Vitolo and Koke and guys like that. He needs to be able to have that. And I think one thing that I noticed at the game, that Diego Costa really wasn't on quite the same wavelength as the guys playing behind them. And a lot of the time he was kind of moving around and the guys didn't really know where he was, which for me would be a bit disconcerting. And when Alvaro Morata came on, it looked a little bit more like the guys in midfield had a bit more of an understanding, or they were just maybe in effect kind of more used to kind of where he would be or knew where he would be. So that's something maybe for Diego Costa, he's going to have some competition there from Morata for that spot.
Dov, going forward with the national team side, I mean, it's a very tough shoes to fill for Lopetegui, but do you see him trying to stamp his own seal of approval on this team with the squad changes he's making, with the style of football that we saw against Italy? Do you think he's trying to move away from what's worked so well for Spain, because like some people think perhaps that era of Spanish football is starting to come to an end with the likes of Xavi already gone, Iniesta on the wane, you know, nobody's getting younger in terms of Piqué and Ramos etc. as well?
I think he's putting his own stamp on it, but I think he's been smart and he's not completely ripping up what was done before. And that's something that you kind of have to respect about what he's doing with the national team. He's kind of keeping things similar in a way that the players, like Aldo said, they kind of know where they're playing, what they're going to be doing and what their job is. But then he's kind of blooding in some new players and he's maybe changing things up a little bit, but not too much. So you don't have a complete set of disjointed players kind of with not, they've been playing a certain way for so many years, and then suddenly the new guy comes in and just rips it all up and says, right, we're starting again from scratch. I think he's evolving the team in the right way. I think, and as well, you've got a group which in reality Spain or Italy are going to win this group, and then the other team's going to go on a playoff, which you would expect them to win as well. So all he really needs to do over the next 2 years is build a group, get a good dynamic, and make sure kind of the team is playing exactly how he wants it to do, and to get his ideas across. That's all we've really got to do. It's not like it was maybe 10, 15 years ago where these qualifying groups, you needed to win X, Y and Z games. Nowadays, or especially for the recent tournaments, the way it's working out is you don't really have to win every single game to qualify. Spain are going to beat the likes of Albania and Macedonia and teams like that quite easily.
Yeah.
So I think that he's just got a couple of years to kind of put his imprint on it. And I don't think he'll really change what was so successful too much. He'll just kind of evolve it, which is what I think a good coach should do.
And of course, when the World Cup gets expanded to 40-odd teams, Spain will just be able to basically turn up and they'll have a place booked. They won't even need these qualifying rounds, some of the big guys from European football. Aldo, let's move on to this Albania game, though, because we did see then a change in setup, a change in style from this Spanish side, with three at the back, four in midfield and three up front. Something a little different. Why do you think that change was necessary for the game away against Albania?
I think that the change was necessary mainly because of Lopetegui knowing the Albania's approach, the fact that they were going to sit pretty deep, try to be as compact as possible, and sort of defend near their own penalty box. And I think that was obviously the biggest reason why he played three at the back. He knew that they were going to have Spain was going to have most of the possession, and all of Albania's chances were mainly going to come from the counterattack. So by having an extra midfielder, you kind of stop Albania in transition. So I think that's pretty much the main reason. And there's some similarities actually between the Italy match and the Spain match and the Albania match, just because of how the teams were set up. But obviously, Italy being a team with a little bit more quality, more well-known players, they were able to counterattack a lot more than Albania did. What really impressed me most about the game against Albania was how well Spain were able to stop Albania's counterattacks. And I think that that's something that they've really improved on in comparison to Del Bosque's side. I think that they're stopping these counterattacks a lot better than they were before in the Euros and in the last World Cup.
Is that, do you think, because Lopetegui's just saying, Sergio Busquets, you're just going to be the guy to basically be that frustrating guy in the heart of the pitch in the midfield. And I kind of take that almost exact same role that he has with Barcelona, being the deep man in the heart of the pitch that helps just provide that little bit of extra defensive support. Why is he then thriving a little bit more, perhaps, then in this new system?
I think a lot of it's the different players we've mentioned. I mean, we saw Koke, and he's been a big help and has had several good games, and it's a very important addition to this team, and I think it's helping take that team in the new direction. So I think a lot of it's the players being used, and also in this match more specifically, it was the system itself, but I'd say mostly it's the different players that Lopetegui's introducing that are definitely helping in this regard.
I think everybody's been quite happy with the Spain side being freshened up slightly. I mean, used to be the case, and still there's a majority of the players, or a lot of the players are Barcelona, Real Madrid. But actually, in terms of, there was never really a question about squad harmony too much, except perhaps built on by the press. But I just think in terms of mixing it around a bit more, you know, giving people like Koke a chance, of course you got De Gea in from Manchester United, etc. I think it just helps to break up that Real Madrid-Barcelona rivalry in the national team and the dominance in that national team, of it being perhaps too cliquey, and you're starting to see an even more even-handed chemistry to a national team.
Yeah, it's always a tough balance to strike. I mean, for example, Italy, well known to have always all their defenders from one team, whether it's historically been Juventus or Milan or whatnot, they've always tried to get it from one particular club. And I think another player to mention is Silva, who has always had an in-and-out role with the national team, and now he's becoming a much more important player under Lopetegui. It's definitely true, even same with Vitolo. These are guys that are coming in from a lot of different teams and have definitely earned their call-ups, but I definitely agree they're not all from Barcelona, Real Madrid, and they're starting to feel more important within the national team and being given a bit more of an active role. They're no longer on the bench ready to come in, but they're actually starting games. They're rotating in some of these qualifiers as well, so there's a chance for everyone.
So Spain got what they wanted from this international break. 4 points, a big draw away, of course, against Italy. 3 points against Albania with the 2-0 victory. Everything runs smoothly on the pitch, and so that means that we have to have absolute carnage off the pitch to give us something to talk about over the international break. And here we go. Shirt sleeves. Of all the things that could cause a player to retire, shirt sleeves are now coming into this with Piqué and the cut long sleeve shirt rather than wearing a short sleeve shirt, and people assuming that he was cutting off the Spanish flag trim on the arm of the shirt because as a minor protest, even though I believe Sergio Ramos did the same thing as well, because they just felt the long sleeves actually weren't very comfortable, they were too tight and too constricting. But then for Piqué to have all of this hubbub around him and decide, look, I'm just not going to be a part of this political rubbish mixing with football, I'm just out of the national team, I don't want anything to do with it anymore. An unbelievable turn of events on the weekend, guys. I mean, I don't know about you, I didn't see this one coming from any way, shape or form.
I don't think anybody did, Ollie, to be honest. It was something that kind of caught me by surprise. I didn't realise shirt sleeves were such an important part of football. It's obviously you want to have them on, but other than that, who cares? Really, that should be the long and the short of it. If he's cutting off shirt sleeves for more comfort, and if he thinks that will help him play better, then great, fantastic, let him get on with it. But the fact that this has been kind of brought into an argument about his Spanishness or his kind of pro-public support of the Catalonian independence movement or something like that, I just think is nothing short of ridiculous, if I'm being completely honest. And I think it's resulted in a decision which, at the end of the day, is only really going to hurt the Spanish national team, because Piqué is a fantastic central defender, and even though he's not getting any younger, he's still going to be a very, very, very good central defender in 2 years' time and beyond that. That's not going to his ability is not going to diminish over that period of time. And I think for him to be forced into such a decision, it kind of shows you maybe the seriousness of the criticism that he's been getting, obviously over this incident and obviously in previous ones as well. And I think he is a human being. There's only so much so much flack a human being can take before they just think, right, that's it, enough's enough, I'm done.
I'm disappointed that you threw in that pun of the long and short of it and then going on talking about long and short sleeves, Dov. That's disastrous even for a Scotsman like yourself. But who does this reflect badly on? Does this reflect badly on the people that tried to turn it into a story, aka us in the media, for looking too closely at this and saying, oh, is this some sort of political protest? Does it look badly on the Spanish football fans who have booed Piqué in the past and this weekend at times, while playing for the national team and representing his country? I mean, surely the fact that these players are willing to go out and play under a Spanish flag shows that they feel like they are part of this of Spain, of the national team, and part of the nation as a whole. So who's looking like the jackasses, so to speak, in this point?
I'll take a stab at this one. I think What Piqué did is sort of the culmination of a lot of different factors. I think you see the societal pressure, what he's been dealing with a lot of the fans questioning his contributions to the team and whether he really feels Spanish or not. Then you have the political side of things with the independence movement and how that relates to the center of Spain. And then you have the journalist side of things where he's very critical of what the Spanish press has become. And I think that's also, you kind of have to look at it from both sides, that, you know, if the press is publishing stories that they shouldn't be publishing, and then people are reading these stories and contributing to this type of news cycle. I think that there are a lot of different people to blame. You can blame the press for publishing things that they shouldn't be, and then you can basically blame some of the fans as well who've questioned him from the start. So I think that it's a lot of different things, and no one can escape any blame.
I think we should be clear, Aldo, we're not talking about Marca Press, because Marca are fantastic. We're maybe talking about other press.
Yeah.
Of course.
I believe AS is the one that has been mentioned quite a few times across the various web pages, and of course across Marca, about releasing initially the kind of the story and looking into it in this way. I mean, it does just highlight how much of a unbelievably crazy 24-hour news media cycle that we live in, where somebody will see the shirt sleeves have been cut and will make the jump from, oh, maybe they were uncomfortable, to maybe this is some sort of political protest thrown in. And interesting as well, of course, that Ramos with the same thing. Nobody questioned his Spanishness at all, but because Piqué, of course, a Barcelona player, has that sudden, that little twist on it, suddenly the story that can be used to create a provocative headline and throw it out. And unfortunately, it's the Spanish national team that's going to get hindered. Ironically, in this, after people were chastising Piqué for perhaps not being Spanish enough to play in the national team of Spain is going to suffer because of this. I mentioned Ramos.
Before I cut you off, the most ridiculous thing about it is the fact that if you actually look at the sleeves of the long sleeve shirt, it doesn't have the Spanish flag on the parts that it cut off. That's the most ridiculous part of it, whereas essentially this story is literally nothing. It's white. The sleeves that have been cut off are white. There's nothing on them.
Yeah, it's the biggest non-story to turn into an actual story that I think you'll probably see this season, with Piqué's announcing his retirement from the national team this week. What about Sergio Ramos? He's going to be out off the football pitch for a bit, but not by retirement, picking up a knock in the Albania game and out for some time, Aldo. It's a problem for Real Madrid, just because things haven't been too settled at the Bernabeu in the last few weeks, picking up multiple draws, four in their last four games, when expecting Zidane to go on and break that 16 game in a row winning streak that never came to be in the end.
Yeah, the injuries are really piling up in Madrid, and a lot of different players that are not at full fitness, and you can sort of tell there have been so many different changes to the Real Madrid 11. And I mean, recently Sergio Ramos's form has been criticized a little bit, but he's such an important part of that back line, and they'll need his experience, his leadership, if they're going to turn these four draws around and start getting back to their winning ways. And you know, it's a big loss. I think that someone like Varane is going to have to step in, and he's done so a lot, but he's always sort of only features when either Pepe or Ramos get hurt. So he has a big couple games ahead of him. But yeah, Ramos definitely is a big part of the squad, and it'll be a tough to get him back.
I was going to say, you did touch on this. He has been criticised a lot this season, Ramos. I mean, a bit of time away just out of the firing line, though, might be a good thing, especially if Pepe and Varane can hold it together, but without being too impressive, if you will. Ramos undoubtedly will walk back into that Real Madrid side regardless, because of the figure that he is at the club and the defender that he is, and scores plenty of goals as well with his head, of course, at set pieces. But this might be a good thing for Ramos, actually, just have a little moment away, just for a moment, just to hit a reset button. Obviously, it's not good in picking up injuries and being out through that, but this might be what he needs, and this might be what Rafael Varane needs as well, because this is a centre-back that came onto the scene, three, 4 years ago, and looked like he was able to step into this Real Madrid side at a very young age and just play at that high level consistently for multiple games in a row, and it's all just gone a little quiet in terms of his career. I really thought he was going to end up being the next big thing in terms of a centre-back in European football, and much like David Alaba at Bayern Munich was going to be the big new left-back, and he still is an incredible winger, that's for sure, Alaba. But Varane just hasn't quite hit those heights. He's always been stuck in the last couple of years behind Ramos and Pepe, who are very much the preferred two at the Bernabeu. It's a big opportunity for him to try and embed himself and just maybe gives Zidane a few more things to think about in terms of his centre-back partnerships.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're absolutely right. And I think the run of games that they've got gives them a good number of games where he's got relatively easy opposition, but then a couple of big games as well where if he does well in them, it could mean that later on in the season Zidane will trust him more when a big game comes up, or when he needs him, or has another injury or a suspension or something like that, and he'll trust him enough to just stick him in there and not really worry about anything and not have to kind of make any other changes to that defence as well. So I think it's, like you say, it's a good opportunity for him, and let's see how he does in it.
That'd be very interesting to see indeed. Just finally, gents, then, I want to touch on this quickly. The new plans for the Bernabeu have been released, and I want to invoke that miserable old man that is inside every single football fan that doesn't like any sort of change. Dov, so of course I'll start with the Scotsman on this one.
I hate everything.
Exactly. The new plans for the Bernabeu, it all looks very, very impressive. Expanding the capacity, putting a giant roof over it, and the glitzy glass surroundings that are going to be put on the outside of it. We've seen similar plans with the Nou Camp and Barca, and of course the Vicente Calderon is now going, and Atletico Madrid announcing stadium names this week as well. Do we like losing these incredible grounds of world football? I mean, one thing I love about the Nou Camp is that you go there and it's still like it's a bit of an old concrete bowl, but it's you imagine the same fans being sat in those seats for the last 50 years and watching this Barcelona side come on and become the greatest footballing side, arguably, that we've ever seen. The stadiums themselves hold so much heritage. I mean, Manchester United fans, you don't need to tell them what that ground means to them in its current form. To then go and rebrand it, make it more corporate, don't we lose the iconicness of some of these grounds by these big revamps? And I worry we'll have that again with the Bernabeu, which is changed, of course, over time so much, but this new facelift is quite a revolutionary one.
I think football now is not what it was 20, 25, 30 years ago. Football's a business, so they're looking at it for how do we get most bums on seats, how do we make the most amount of money, corporate boxes, executive lounges and all that kind of rubbish that they want to add on to stadiums these days. From a fan's point of view, it looks nice, but then does that help the atmosphere inside the stadium? Does that make your match day experience as a fan better? And I think a lot of the hardcore fans at all clubs would agree that it doesn't, and they don't like it. Whereas a lot of maybe tourist fans who go there for the day, they want a lovely comfortable seat, they want to get their 50 litre bucket of Coca-Cola and 500 bags of crisps and hot dogs and everything else that they want to get. And these kind of new stadiums cater for that. I'll give you an example, right? Here's an example. At the European Championships, right, I was in the Stade de France, and what you could do in the Stade de France was you could literally download an app, send a message to the little catering company people and say, right, I want a Coca-Cola, a bag of crisps and a hot dog, and they would bring it to your seat.
Wow.
That's kind of where football is now. Football is at a place where you don't go with your friends and your dad or whatever, and you sit there and you drink your, in Scotland you have a Bovril and a pie and that's all you get, and then you go buy it yourself. Nowadays it's you have corporate sponsors who have the drink, the food, the snacks, whatever else brought to you, so that you can just basically sit there, relax and enjoy the game. For me, that's not the football that I grew up with. And I know, obviously, I'm assuming that both of you guys, it's not the same football that you grew up with as well. So it's a different game. And that's why I think they're redeveloping these stadiums, because it has changed. It's no longer that kind of standard on the terraces, freezing cold. People want undercover. They want probably want heated seats if they can get away with it.
Yeah. I think that was actually where the first times I went to the Bernabeu. They had the heaters in the roof. I'd never seen anything like that at a football stadium, and it was getting a bit chilly and they all suddenly came on and we were right up at the back of the Bernabeu, and that was lux to lux right there. I'm sat in a cold stadium and yet they're still putting heaters down, which probably don't hit the people in the front row on the bottom tier, but up in the gods, that's what you need when you're kind of being caught by the wind a bit more. But how much, you used one word there which stood out a little bit, Dov, tourists. How much is that trying to capitalise on the tourists that come? Because these grounds won't sell out when Leganés come to the Camp Nou or to the Bernabeu, or even when perhaps somebody like Granada go. But for the big nights, for the Champions League nights, for Barcelona against Real Madrid, the El Clásicos, for the Madrid derbies, these grounds will sell out, not just with the local fans, but people will travel from all over the world to try and get to these games. Do you think that's the ease of travel, the tourism around football? You get all these packages, Aldo. Do you think that's creating that as well? And because as a tourist, you want to go somewhere nice. You know, it's nice to go to a 5-star hotel as a tourist than it is to go to a 1-star hotel. In the same way, perhaps the tourist kind of stream encourages people to create a nicer, classier, more sophisticated and clean football atmosphere and ground for those tourists to come and enjoy it.
Yeah, this is a pretty big issue in La Liga right now. I think that a lot of the stadiums are kind of trying to find different ways to make sure that you combine the two. You have your faithful local fans and then the traveling support as well that are coming from all over the world. And you see that at the Bernabeu, you see that at the Camp Nou, you see that at a lot of different stadiums. They're definitely trying to find a way to mix the two. And right now, I think this ties in with what the La Liga president, Tebas, is trying to do in terms of branding the league and filling up the stadiums. Because right now, as it is, there are a lot of stadiums that go unfilled. And there has to be a better way to kind of make sure people are going to the matches. And you know, no one likes change. I think Dov put it very eloquently. No one wants this change to take place. But at the same time, we can't be demanding, you know, these million-dollar signings and things like that while having a architecture or whatever the stadium that's not up to the standards. So I think that it kind of goes both ways, and you need to see this sort of adapting, if you will.
I'll cut every footballer's wage by 50% if it means that I don't have the opportunity to order a Coke from the seat in the Camp Nou, and I can just have a Bovril and a pie, even in Spain, maybe a paella instead or something like that while I watch the game. I would happily half Neymar's salary. That's gone. Don't worry about it, as long as I can have that. Gents, let's leave it there. We do have, of course, the La Liga action coming back up this weekend. The likes of Barcelona taking on Deportivo, Atletico Madrid taking on Granada, Real Madrid are away against Real Betis, is a big game on Sunday night. Villarreal against Celta Vigo as well. But that's all we've got time for here on the podcast today. Remember to get on Marca in English on Twitter. That's @Marca in English. Get on to Marca as well on the web, www.marca.com/EN, for instant roundup, news, reviews, debate from Spanish football. Some excellent writers along there, not just Aldo. He's not a one-man crew on that website, not just yet, anyway. And of course, you can catch us on Instagram, catch the podcast on iTunes. Remember to sign up, be a subscriber, leave a comment, review anything you want us to talk about, let us know. And until 7 days' time, enjoy the football coming up this weekend. We're finally back to La Liga. It's been a long 10 days or so, hasn't it? Have a good week. Take care.